Okay, our third case for this morning is United States against Hanna, 10-13-31. And here from Mr. Makarios.
Good morning, Your Honor.
Good morning.
This case is about Mr. Hanna got married, had a child. Relationship did not go well. Divorce, child support. Mr. Hanna was very generous with his family. At one point, he was paying double the amount that the court required him. He was paying $5,000 a month instead of $900 every 2 weeks. However, he moved out, and the relationship with the job got worsened. He was laid off, and he was unable to find a job.
Could we kind of cut to the chase here? The statute that we're dealing with is 228A, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
And as I understand your argument, 228A addresses or looks only to resources that would have been defined as income under Section 61 of the Internal Revenue Code. And I see no such reference. In fact, the word income isn't even used here. Mr. Hanna had a very nice standard of living during all the years that he was not contributing to the support of his daughter. And really the only issue before us is whether under this particular statute, no matter where his resources were coming from, whether he had a duty to share some of them with the daughter pursuant to the order of the DuPage County Court.
That's correct, Your Honor. That's exactly the issue on appeal. And that's the issue.
We see this reference to the Internal Revenue Code. The district court, I thought, understood this perfectly well. He said, you know, you can have definitions of income for tax purposes, but you can have all sorts of other things. Gifts are, in fact, taxed by to the donor. I mean, there are all kinds of things that the tax laws do, but the tax laws are not what we're dealing with here. We're dealing with 228A.
And 228A is talking about willfulness. And willfulness here comes if the person has income. And the definition of income is periodic.
No, you're using the word income, though, in a very technical sense. Willfulness certainly would flow if there's a failure to pay when there are resources available that the person could use to satisfy that obligation. But I want to use a very general word here because I think that's what the cases support. And the record seems to be very clear that Mr. Hanna had a lot of resources available to him.
But those resources, Your Honor, came with strings attached.
No, they didn't. I mean, it doesn't matter. He might say, well, I had a moral obligation to my donors, but it doesn't mean he didn't have, I mean, if they were saying you have to use this money to pay on your Jaguar, I just don't see how where the law allows a person to say subjectively, I've decided to cordon off these resources so that I don't use them for my daughter. I just don't know that that's a private choice. The law is looking objectively at what resources are actually available to you. 1 month it may be a lot, the next month it may be nothing. That would all be very relevant. But I don't see that pattern here.
Your Honor, let us look at the statute. It includes many things, but it did not include gifts on purpose.
In fact, though, it includes a rebuttable presumption that if there is the outstanding support order, there is the ability to pay that order. And so at that point, it's your client's obligation to show that he does not, in fact, have that ability to pay, where he has access to literally more than $500,000 during this period of time.
Correct. But let us say how that worked. The way it worked, he was using his credit card to spend on his life. Then he would ask for resources to pay that.
On his life at Disney World, on his golf trips, on his very nice automobiles, and you talk about his ability to find work. My goodness, a pathologist is in pretty big demand, I would think.
Correct, Your Honor, but here is another issue. Because of the child support default, when he did not have a job, he lost his license to practice medicine. It's catch 22. He has
it's
an obligation.
It's not a catch 22. He could have used some of that money to satisfy the obligation, get his license reinstated. And besides, you can do a lot of things with scientific skill other than be an MD. So, but Judge Tinder's right. Subpart B of 228 creates a rebuttable presumption that the obligor has the ability to pay. And there's just nothing in this statute that ties the obligation to pay to the source of the assets that you have.
I'll go back to the way child support is decided. The court looks at my income and decides based on what I make.
And then he goes back to the court that issued the order and shows that to the court. That's not a part of this law.
Well, he obviously is a good doctor, but he's not. He doesn't have a good understanding of the law. If he went to court and said, I don't have a job, what would have happened? The court would have modified the order.
What would have happened is the court would have required a sworn affidavit that showed all of his assets, all of his bank accounts, all of his certificates of deposit, stock, whatever he has in the way of resources, a sworn affidavit like that. And the court would have discovered that even though he didn't have a job that was giving him W-2 income, that he had a lot of other assets, some of it parked in Canadian banks, some of it perhaps, you know, elsewhere, I don't know.
And it's very clear from the cases that you don't get to re-argue the suitability, appropriateness of the amount of the order in the criminal prosecution. It's really an irrelevant argument.
Correct.
But even if it were, if your guy had paid a penny on the support order, it would be a better argument. He paid nothing, zero.
Your Honor, what would happen if the family paid directly his rent? If the family directly paid his leasing of his car, would at that moment say he had this much money? Would not be. It happened indirectly, paying his bill indirectly. And he never had more money that he owed. When he came
there
to...
There are concepts of evading obligations that are very important here. He had assets. He had things that were valuable things.
Your Honor, when he came to court...
He has Canadian bank accounts.
After closing his American bank account.
He had only...
When a seizure was placed against it.
There were only $4,000, Your Honor, in that bank account. And that was taken for child support.
So and he closed that account and uses only the Canadian accounts thereafter.
Because it was empty. And that's the money that was flowing to him from overseas was coming to that bank account. And... The issue here, Your Honor, is whether or not he had willfulness to do that.
And the government had a lot of evidence. This is a jury trial. The government had tons of evidence that there was willfulness, including some of the slides they used that you complained about when he makes this statement. I want to find it in the back here. I'm not going to use my lifelines to pay child support. I'm using them to pay myself. Well, a jury could understand that. Maybe a jury wouldn't have to, but a jury would understand that as evidence of willfulness. He knew he had the obligation. He knew he could use some of this money, at least, as Judge Tinder says, maybe even a small amount, and he chooses not to.
When he was brought to court, when he was indicted, the court found that he deserves to be represented by the public defender because the money that was in the bank at that time, which was $67,000, was
not relevant.
Was less than what he had. He had no equity in his life whatsoever.
You are trying to re-argue the underlying child support order. You are not focusing on the fact that over the years that he didn't pay, he had some money that he could have contributed, as the district court's instructions indicated, some money. Nobody's even saying it had to be 100%.
And there's even an argument to be made that he structured his life so that he would have no equity. Instead of buying the vehicles, he leased them so they couldn't be attached. He rented instead of buying property, so on and so forth. He stopped working. I know he lost his license, but only because of his intentional and willful disregard for his child support obligation.
Your Honor, when he had money, he was paying double what we was required to do.
It doesn't matter, though. He still had an arrears. You agree with that?
I agree with that, Your Honor, but I agree about willfulness that he did not have a source of income to pay to raise his child support. That's the issue. And
we understand that that's your argument. I don't think repeating it helps much. But
and the other issue is, Your Honor, having those the picture that was put, definitely inflammatory to the jury. The jury looked at those pictures and saw this issue of I rather use the money to support myself than to pay my daughter. Next is a picture of his daughter. Next is a picture of the cars. Definitely inflames the jury, showing clearly that this man prefers to
But it was, as you just pointed out, it was the government's burden to prove willfulness. Why isn't the government entitled? I mean, sometimes some of the most pertinent evidence is pretty powerful stuff for a jury.
The pictures were definitely inflammatory, Your Honor.
But they were showing willfulness. They were showing he had a choice.
There were enough evidence, Your Honor, to show that what he had and what his ability to pay, if you consider that his ability to pay.
Well, doesn't the visual of the vehicle give us some information as to whether it's a necessary vehicle or whether it's a luxury vehicle?
The name itself, Your Honor, is enough to show that this is a luxury vehicle.
It may tell you something. The price may tell you something. The lease amount may tell you something. But to see that it is a sporty-looking car makes it something more different and maybe more willful than a very utilitarian vehicle.
True. But it's still
so the advocacy, the ability to paint that picture, includes the ability to make that type of argument, I think.
I see that it's inflammatory to the jury, Your Honor, but if you disagree with me, that's the point we're here for. The other issue, Your Honor, and I wanted to point out is when I was giving the jury the closing argument, I tried to present to the jury how the income is decided, and the judge accepted the objection of the government and said, I'll instruct them on the issue of tax law.
And that's not quite what he said.
He said, I will instruct them on the law, to be specific. And he did not mention anything about tax law. He did not mention, as a matter of fact,
I didn't think it was relevant.
But, Your Honor, the way he put it, Judge Kaur said, what matters is what the defendant had income in whatever form of he wishes to characterize. He was telling the jury exactly.
That was a quote from one of our cases, as I recall.
But I understand this is from a case probably about the borrowing money, the person who borrowed money. The difference between gift and borrowing money is when I borrow money, I owe the person whom I borrowed money from money. I have control over the use of that money, different from a gift. And I use an example in the closing argument, if I may, Your Honor. When, let us say, my brother gave me money to buy a suit. I felt bad about buying a suit for myself. I bought a coat for my wife and a jacket for me. How do you think my brother would feel? That shows any gift comes with strings attached.
Relevant to this statute, that's what I need to see. Where is the subsection of this statute that says no one has to devote any gifts to child support?
If that's the case, Your Honor, that means anybody will get a gift, will have to include this on the list of income.
That happens all the time. I mean, the prisoners get gifts, and they've got to put gifts down for their prison account. I mean, it doesn't strike me as such an unusual proposition.
Your argument, if we won the Powerball lottery, you wouldn't have to pay any child support.
No, that's...
That's not income.
No, as a matter of fact, Your Honor, if that was the case, I would not be here arguing this issue. Because lottery, he earned the money, he has the right to use it in any way or fashion, and he has to pay tax on that. It's the taxable income. But if I get gift, I don't have control over the use of it. I have to use it according to what the donor is giving.
Why is an income here, meaning money coming in from whatever source, and not income strictly as you want to define it under the tax code?
Because income is a way we build on the assessment of child support.
But you're assuming, it's an odd theory of gifts, actually. You're assuming that every time somebody gives a gift, there are strings attached to it. And that seems to me entirely contrary to common experience. If I decide to give each one of my children $100 for a Christmas present, they can do anything they want to with that $100. I've given it to them. It's now in their possession. and they get to choose. And so I'm not saying there's zero gifts with strings, but the law could say, as Judge Evans put it, income means whatever came in, however it came in.
Yeah, and if you give your children...
The strong public policy the state has to support children.
That's different from the argument we have. If you give your children $100 on Christmas, may I continue?
Please, yeah.
That's different because...
Why? It's still a gift.
You give them a gift of money, they can use it in any way they want, versus I'm giving somebody money to support him or herself.
Oh, there's no difference. That's just in the mind of the donor. But anyway, you certainly have made that argument in your brief, and we understand that that's your position.
I'll save the last 3 minutes.
Actually, you did not save anything, but I'll see it.
Thank you.
Anymore. Okay. Ms. Pillay.
May it please the Court, Shelby Pillay on behalf of the United States. The District Court properly instructed the jury on ability to pay, and with respect to the question of any restrictions or strings on this gift, the defendant provided no testimony or no evidence that there were, in fact, restrictions on this money.
Does the record show how much in the way of these resources he had in the form of cash and how much was, as Mr. Makarios was saying, was just somebody paying his rent for him every month or somebody paying his car leases so that the funds never flowed through his fingers?
Yes, Your Honor. In fact, the entire amount of $506,000 was in cash in bank accounts in Canada. And he was the one who had he had sole signature authority on both of these accounts. And, in fact, he's the one who paid for all of his luxury vehicles and for his credit card payments for all the entertainment and whatnot.
So we don't have before us a case where somebody has just decided to provide exclusively in-kind support to a person in Dr. Hanna's position.
That is correct. And furthermore, he didn't have any evidence to support, you know, that he was actually restricted even from a verbal standpoint. He didn't have any family members testify.
Didn't he testify to that?
He testified that he was not certain he could use the money or that he was unsure, but no actual showing of a restriction or a string other than his own belief.
There were no documents that supported it, so it was a credibility question for the jury to determine as to whether those were restricted in some way?
To some level, but in addition, it really wasn't a very strong or sufficient argument that he actually had a restriction. It was just his own belief. He wasn't sure.
Well, so that leads to the question, how strong a position is the government taking? Is it the government's position that once, I'll make it easy, a cash gift has been turned over to a person with a child support obligation, regardless of the wishes of the donor, this is now an asset that the person has an obligation to use either partly or wholly to satisfy the obligation, or is it the government's position that strings imposed by the donor are of some relevance?
I think it could be some relevance. It's really very much a fact question. I think that would be an evidentiary issue in the district court because to the extent that in this case he had any restriction, he provided no evidence to show that. But there are cases in which potentially there's a trust set up or some sort of a contract that potentially could show that the defendant did not have the ability to pay, which is really the core question here.
Okay. I mean, but that's why I wanted to make it simple and say cash. I certainly can understand if there were a trust and the trustee were under restrictions for disbursements of income from the trust, we might have a situation that was different. But as soon as the money comes into the custody of the person with the support obligation, under 228, do you read 228 as saying you have kind of a superseding federal obligation to devote that money to the child support obligation, or do you see some indication that there's a right to say, well, you know, I'm going to put this money in this box and that money in that box? Money's fungible.
True, but I think the question under the statute is whether or not the defendant would have the ability to pay after he's met his basic subsistence needs.
So, how is that term defined in the statute? Is it the same way as it is in the bankruptcy laws?
I'm not sure if it's the same as the bankruptcy laws, but the question is pretty broad. It's, do you have the ability to pay? And in determining ability to pay,
if you say, well, my lifestyle requires a Jaguar, a Porsche, an Audi, and a Lexus, because I like having four cars, and then somebody else's lifestyle involves having, you know, a Chevy. this is all subjectively determined?
I think it's much more objective than that. And, in fact, basic subsistence needs, you know, could be bread and water. I think it depends on the facts surrounding the circumstances.
Well, I mean, that's why I look to the bankruptcy laws. I mean, bankruptcy laws understand that people need housing, they need food, they need clothes, they need often transportation, they need basic things. So it's not bread and water.
I think that analysis is likely very relevant. In addition, the district court was properly did not instruct the jury on any tax law. And first of all, the defendant didn't submit any jury instructions or proposed jury instructions, so forfeited this issue.
The judge did instruct using the word income in a couple of the instructions, didn't he?
Yes, he did. But with respect to willfulness and ability to pay, the question of what constitutes income was not raised.
Now, I thought, turning to a different one of Mr. Makarios's arguments, that this slide where you have the daughter's picture juxtaposed to the picture of the Porsche really was kind of over the top. You'd already given the daughter's picture an individual slide with the quote, "I'm using them to pay myself." And then you have payments for the Porsche, $38,341, payments for the daughter, same time period, zero. But that's, it doesn't seem to me necessary to make the point that he's paying a lot of money for the Porsche.
Well, I think it was just showing, and it was providing the government an opportunity to show the jury, here are the choices this defendant made. And
photograph?
Yes, Your Honor. In fact, you know, as you know, the government's permitted to tell its story colorfully with descriptive richness. And
I don't want the jury just to think this man is a terrible person. Here's this lovely young girl. He must be bad. I mean, he's entitled to a fair trial.
Absolutely. But first of all, these were two of 29 slides in the closing argument. And second of all, these actually show what he did. He did, in fact, spend $38,000 on a Porsche and $0 on his child. He did, in fact, say that I'm not going to use my lifelines to pay child support. I'm going to use them for myself. These were simply depicting what he actually said and did.
I don't have any problem with colorful stuff. I think that's pretty good. I'm going to ask you about the restitution, though. He did pay a lot of money and towards that. Has it been credited as restitution?
It has, Your Honor, but it's not necessary for the district court to amend the order every time a payment is made, and I think that would be extraordinarily burdensome on a district court to do that. And furthermore, the order actually says the restitution amount less any amount paid towards arrears, which in this case was the $167,000.
He came up with that pretty quickly, didn't he?
Yes, Your Honor.
Of course, part of that was the account. The Canadian account, right?
Correct.
But 90,000 of it was yet another gift from, I think, his mother in that instance?
From his family, yes, Your Honor.
It just looks a little better to have a smaller restitution order. And he did pay $167,000, a significant sum here. So it might make him feel a little better to have a smaller figure that he's looking at here when he walks out of court.
That's possible, but as the defendant even stated in his statement of facts in his opening brief, that he paid the restitution following the sentencing.
So did the amount of money for the restitution contribute in any other way to his sentence?
In what respect?
Well, sometimes, you know, under 2B1, the amount of money will put you at a higher offense level, but it doesn't do that here, right? There's a 24-month...
Correct. So statutory maximum, correct.
There's no challenge to the sentence here.
There was not.
Yeah.
If there are no further questions, the government respectfully requests that the defendant's conviction and sentence be affirmed. Thank you.
Okay. So, Mr. Makarios, your time ran out, but I'll give you 1 minute.
Thank you. Thank you, Your Honor. I just wanted quickly to say we had a motion for telephonic testimony for the family members, and the judge denied those motions. And also, Your Honor, he has been in jail. His sentence is almost over, and him losing his license is not benefiting anybody, including Maryam herself, because he will get out of jail unable definitely to get a job again, and nobody will benefit from that. I ask the court to find him not guilty or to remand the case for a new trial. Thank you, Your Honor.
All right. Thank you very much. The case is taken under advisement.